The Ghost Goal Podcast.
Chelsea delivered a second game of the season contender in less than a week on Sunday, as they fought back on three different occasions to snatch a draw at home to champions Manchester City. Meanwhile, Wolves sprung another upset at Molyneux, beating Tottenham after two injury time goals, and Bournemouth stunned Newcastle at the Vitality Stadium in a weekend of pure unfiltered Barclays. I'm Alex, here with Javier. Welcome to the Ghost Goal Podcast, episode 431. There's only one place to start this week, Javier, and it's the same place we started last week. Because, boy, these last two games for Chelsea, they have not been good for my heart health, but I'm sure they've been entertaining to everyone else. How are you doing?
Yeah, man? I was going to say, I don't know about game of the season for the other game, but
people were talking about it that way. I know the result was 4-1, and it seemed like, you know, it was maybe the clown end,
but game of the season.
I mean, it was entertaining.
Like an atrocity. It was a monstrosity.
Was tough to fit in everything that happened in that game into a highlight reel. You had to watch it like all the way through to really understand how mental that game was. And somehow we topped it with an even better game this week against an even better team. But again, how are you doing, man? You all
doing
right?
Doing well. Back on track, you know. Look, doing all right. Fantasy-wise, not so much, Alex. You know, definitely in the depression zone over there. So had a horrific week, and we'll talk about it a little bit more later. But yeah, it dulled the win pretty casual win we got this weekend. So
yeah, I might have to stage a little fantasy corner mutiny this week.
A coup? Yes,
a coup of sorts. Yes, but we'll get to that eventually. Let's start with Chelsea 4, Manchester City 4. An absolutely insane game frankly, I was just happy that we got the Anthony Taylor bullshit decision out of the way early, and it was pretty much done and dusted with that Erling Haaland penalty when he...
I'm not going to lie. I saw someone flip over in the box. I was just like, oh, he's going to give that. Because it was like, it looked like it was just tussle 50-50, like live when you were watching it. And as soon as it happened, I was like, oh, he's going to give a penalty there. And I just started cracking up the second he pointed to the spot. And you knew VAR was going to back him up. It did seem like both of them kind of fouled each other. And, you know, yeah, he pulled them back a little bit, but... You know,
I didn't even want to get into the nitty gritty of
no,
it. Like,
no,
I
do.
Don't care.
I do, though, because you rarely see that called. But again, it's the consistency. You don't see that always called. Sometimes you do. Sometimes you don't. But yeah, no, just hilarious that you guys were able to come back from it so quickly. And, you know, a huge boost for you guys. It almost felt like you guys went into the lead when you got that equalizer. I mean, you did take the lead shortly later, but it really did feel that way.
Yeah, it gave everyone a clue as to how this game was going to go, and that it was going to be one that you didn't want to step away from or miss any part of it, because Chelsea, we had started well, and then City sort of, you know, grew into the match a little bit, got that that first goal from the penalty. And the fact that Chelsea didn't just, you know, wither and kind of fall off from that point was very encouraging to me as a Chelsea fan. The fact that they pushed right back, took advantage of, you know, Manchester City's mistakes that admittedly they did make for not tracking Thiago Silva at all for the 1-1 equalizer. And then Josko Gvardiol making the same mistake that Levi Colwill made against Spurs and turned his back on the ball. You could replay that like pass that Palmer played in behind for Reece James 10 more times, and I think Gvardiol would, you know, at least do something with the ball, maybe just deflect it out wide or something to stop it landing perfectly in Reece James's lap for him to square to Raheem Sterling. But on that occasion, he turned his back on the ball. It hit, I think, his back foot as he was trying to track back and just sat up perfectly for Reece to just cross for Raheem to put Chelsea up 2-1. But I did just want to talk about the approach from Chelsea and the attitude from Chelsea overall that was most encouraging. And it was the fact that we for the first time in seemingly years, we were not afraid to go at Manchester City. We made chaos our friend. And that has really got me thinking that this might be the first time this season that we've seen this Chelsea team play like a stereotypical Mauricio Pochettino team. Pochettino at Spurs and at Southampton, and I didn't watch much of him at Espanyol, but I've heard when he was manager at Espanyol, his teams did the best when they would just sort of tap into chaos, force teams like Guardiola's
players
Barcelona,
like Cucurea,
now his Manchester
that,
City. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, he's not the only one, but the thing that Guardiola wants to do most as a manager is to control the game through possession as much as possible. If it has to be at the back and then steadily build up that possession further and further forward and pin teams deeper and deeper, that's the perfect kind of game for him. And Chelsea, that was just not an option in this game. We were pressing high. We paid the price for it on multiple occasions, being opened up by Manchester City and obviously still conceding 4 goals. But it was a gamble that Pochettino and the players were willing to take to try and get something from the game. And, you know, if there's a couple of bounces our way or theirs, either team could have ended up winning that game. But I think 4-4 at the end of the day was, you know, probably the most accurate result. It would have felt wrong. And I feel like neutrals would probably agree. It would have felt wrong if Chelsea had come out of that game with nothing. And I was starting to feel that way when Rodri scored that like heavily deflected almost winner with a couple of minutes left to go. But then the ball did not lie, and Ruben Dias gave away a clear penalty to Armando Broja for former Manchester City Academy player Broja Cole Palmer to strike in the winner. So both of our former City players got goals against their old side. And I'm feeling pretty good heading into this international break. We've had this tough run we were talking about, Javier. We haven't lost during it. We lost to Brentford, but we haven't lost to the teams that were supposed to be the toughest. We have 2 draws versus Manchester City and Arsenal and a win at Tottenham. So
I think of all of those performances, I would be most encouraged by this one. I thought that this was your best performance that I've seen from Chelsea in a long time. Even, you know, I know that you were getting praised for the Arsenal game, the way you guys played, at least in the first, you know, 60, 70 minutes. But I thought that this was the most consistent performance for the full 90 minutes that I've seen from Chelsea. I thought Raheem Sterling was fantastic for once in a big game. He didn't shy away against his you know, former club. I thought he was really good on the ball for once, was making, you know, good decisions and leading the team.
Have you seen anyone abuse Kyle Walker so consistently like that? I don't even think Kylian Mbappe was able to do that to Kyle Walker when they played in the World Cup.
Yeah, no, I thought he was very, very impressive. I thought he was, you know, your best player on the day. I really, really enjoyed the way that he actually played against his former team just in this on this occasion. It's rare that I praise Raheem Sterling, even though I think, didn't he get a yellow from diving? He definitely tried to dive at some point, but typical Raheem.
That was Doku.
Oh, yeah. Doku got a yellow as well. But
I don't remember Raheem diving. I do remember him picking up the ball and running at Kyle Walker every chance he got. And then when he switched over to the right wing, doing the same thing to Guardiola. There weren't many players for Chelsea in that game that I wouldn't give, you know, like a positive match rating to. But you're right in that Sterling is up there as one of the best performers. Palmer was amazing as well.
I thought Caicedo was excellent. I think this is probably his best game in a Chelsea shirt. I thought he was
he got abused by Haaland a couple times. He got, like, which happens. You know, Haaland's very good, but he had a tough job to do because we were playing so high up. City eventually were just trying to
kind of threw a stinker,
go direct on us.
I think he didn't really get assisted very much by it. Gallagher was good, but I thought Fernandes did not play very well particularly, and he was the first player to come off actually. So,
he ran out of gas. You could see. I thought he was playing well, like to start, like for the first half, and then pretty early on in the second half after City had taken the lead, there were a few minutes there where Enzo just looked crushed by. Just from being tired, I guess. So hopefully Argentina don't use him too much over the next 2 weeks. But I did want to bring up Conor Gallagher. I think he kind of perfectly encapsulated the attitude that this Chelsea team is going to have to show, not just against teams like Manchester City, but the rest of the season, where he put together everything from his work rate and commitment off the ball in leading that press along with Jackson and Sterling and Palmer, to even just taking shots from long range. He had one in the first half that was a little tame. He took it on the volley and put it straight at Ederson. But then his shot that was eventually saved by Ederson and Nico Jackson came and put in the rebound. Like, that doesn't show up on a stat sheet. That won't be an assist or anything like that. But just the intent to, you know, take a pop when you've got the opportunity. You've got to take a risk like that sometimes. And just, you know, hope that one of your teammates is in a position like Jackson was to take advantage of it. Jackson barely did anything in that game. And I was saying to my brother when we were watching it, like, we should probably take off Nico. He's been kind of invisible. And then, like, a minute later, he scores the 3-3 equalizer. So, and
I mean, this was an uncharacteristic game for Manchester City, because they made several really sloppy mistakes on the ball. Especially for that goal, for the Nicholas Jackson goal, and for the, like you said, the cross in James had to.
But are you not seeing a pattern here? Arsenal and Manchester City come to the Bridge, get pressed, and make mistakes. I'm not saying we're amazing and that Chelsea are back. I'm just saying we clearly, you know, are starting to.
You're starting to, you know, have some fight, and yeah, and the Bridge is starting to become a difficult place to go play again, which is, it hasn't been for a couple of years. And I think that's should be very encouraging to Chelsea fans, that every team now won't be, you know, thinking, oh, we can go to Stamford Bridge and just, you know, get a win here and play swashbuckling and play our style. I think teams are showing now that, you know, you're going to have to deal with what Chelsea bring to the table now. And if not, you're going to lose the game. And it hasn't really been that threat for a couple of years. So good for Chelsea to kind of get that back.
Yeah, I won't go back to like the last couple of seasons, but just comparing last season to this season. Last season we had 10 games against the, you know, the big six teams. There are other teams that have seemingly broken that up now, but in games against Man United, Man City, Arsenal, Liverpool, Tottenham, last season we had 0 wins. We drew 4 games, lost 6, and conceded 15 goals in those 10 games while only scoring 5 goals. This season, in 4 games against Liverpool, Arsenal, Manchester City, Tottenham, we've won 1, drawn 3, lost none. We've scored 11 goals in those games and we've conceded 8. Like, yes, we're still conceding a lot of goals to teams, like to good teams, but I'm just happy to have us back being competitive and scoring goals. And that was kind of the blueprint for what I wanted from this season. I was never convinced that this Chelsea team could, you know, go and challenge for the top 4 and win any, like, truly big trophies.
You conceded 4 goals to City. We conceded 0 at home. So yes, you have little ways to go. Yeah,
we're in very different points of the process, if you like, but we're still further along than I thought we would. I thought we were going to lose that Manchester City game. I'm not joking.
I did too. But, I mean, that was. I mean, do you want to give the statistic, Alex? The 4-4, the last time something like that's happened?
Oh, yeah. Well, I read on the BBC yesterday, after that Chelsea 4-4, that it was only the 5th match in Premier League history to feature as many as 4 equalizing goals in one game. And it was the first time it happened since 2009. And Javier, you were the one to remember, since it was applied to your team, that it was Arsenal 4, Liverpool 4 back in 2009 when Andre Arshavin scored 4 goals himself.
Yep, and then Liverpool still equalized, and we had the winner in the 90th minute, and then in the 93rd minute, back when they only gave like 3 minutes of extra time, Benayoun scored with the last kick of the game to equalize it 4-4. So I know how it feels. I know how it feels, City fans. And Benayoun came to Arsenal later on.
And then Chelsea.
Yeah.
Yeah, he got around.
He had all of the Ghost Goal members teams. He was a part of all of us.
But quickly hitting on City before we move on, I did have my first thought while watching this game. I was thinking to myself, we can get at this team. And it wasn't a thought that I had specific to Chelsea, even though that was, you know, that was obviously the game that was going on. I was thinking about it more in a more vague sense, in terms of, I don't think it's just Chelsea. I think it's any team that is willing to
really
take the risk.
John Stones
playing open. Yeah, Stones was a huge
really
miss for
Stones.
Them.
And I also thought that, like, offensively, Alex, they looked pretty disjointed in what they wanted to do, because they tried to kind of force the ball to Doku again, especially in the first half, and it just didn't work. Reece James, like, had him in his pocket, and Doku had a stinker after having, you know, the best performance of it that he'd had in you know, his Manchester City shirt. Right afterward, he produces, you know, one of his worst performances. So, you know, he was the first player to come off in the 59th minute. So you can tell that Guardiola wanted to change the game plan. And, you know, to a certain extent, it worked. You know, with Grealish on the pitch, you know, City looked better. And then even with Kovacic as well, I mean, they had ways to improve. And I think with Stones, this team looks a lot more better defensively than, you know, this was a very offensive-minded lineup. And I think Guardiola paid the price, you know, by dropping a point here. But he'll learn his lesson. And you know, I don't think we'll see him play this lineup again, really.
Yeah, I would imagine Grealish will be used for games like this in the future, because he does offer them a little bit more control in possession than Doku does. Doku is, you know, like a young stallion that you just want to, like, let off the leash and let him run at guys without any sort of thought about whether what will happen or the consequences,
like,
of if
Silva
he gives it
as
up.
Well, both of them just, like, use their experience to you know, bully him, really, so... Just felt like when he was actually up against good defenders, that he folded. He couldn't just do his tricks and flicks. He was still fast, though. He got to the byline a couple times. I'll give him that.
All right, where do we want to turn to next? Because I think we... I mean, I could talk about this game all pod if you wanted to. But, you know, there's other things
to
hit on.
Let's get the Arsenal game out of the way, Alex. There isn't too much to talk about. But 3-1, you know, it was a good win. Took a little while, you know. I thought Burnley definitely... defended fairly well in the first half, and it's slightly concerning, but I can point out why the fast starts have gone away with Arsenal and why we've kind of, it takes us now a while to get into games. It's just not having Thomas Partey. I mean, this team is completely different without him in midfield. Declan Rice offers something very different to what Partey did. What Partey, I think, was the best in the world, and I talked about it last year, was being alone in midfield and just distributing the ball from one point to another extremely quickly. He could switch any side of the field, or, you know, ping the ball in between the center backs or the goalie between him, and he was just amazing as that focal point in midfield. I think Arteta went all big brain at the beginning of the season, played him at right back, and now he's injured. It kind of sounds like till, you know, they're saying till at least till, you know, the new year, and then there's African Cup of Nations, so, you know, who knows, he probably won't be back till February, so just brutal for us that he's going to miss, you know, 2 or 3 months here, and he's already missed most of this season. He's only played 4 games in the Premier League so far, and he's a huge player that we didn't really bring a replacement in for, you know, granted Xhaka,
Declan Rice, but...
Well, no, we lost Xhaka as well, and Rice is playing that role right now. I mean, again, he started him at the 8. He started Jorginho at 6. And, of course, I thought this was Rice's probably worst game for us. It looked like he was a little bit gassed in this game, and, you know, it ended up not really needing him that much in this game, because what Burnley offered was mostly from the wings, and, you know, it was a lot on our... finally, Ben White was able to get a rest. I liked seeing that. Tomiyasu started right back. Zinchenko had a great game, you know, other than his fantastic goal. I thought he was, you know, back to his old self, looked like he was able to, you know, defensively and offensively provide, you know, his so far his best performance of the season. But it was Burnley. I thought Burnley were decent, though. I thought they, especially offensively, they were able to produce more than they usually do on the ball. And that Koloshenko kid is, or Kolosho. He's very Coleo good.
Show, yeah.
Yeah, he's great. I think he's, you know, definitely a Premier League level talent. You know, he's a handful. And they had a few few players in there that
do you mind if I just say about Kolyosho?
Yeah.
Have you noticed how when he started the first game of the season, the home game against Manchester City, he was American? Now he's Italian. The Italian like national team have come in. They've snapped him up. They've started playing him at youth level, basically because he plays in the Premier League. And the U.S. national team is like nowhere to be found. He was an American kid like before, and like two international windows later, he's now like looking pretty like set to play for the Italian national team. I don't know. I just thought that was interesting. I'd be raging if I was an American.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they could have used him, although they have a lot of good offensive players, so I don't know if they need another one in the mix. Oh,
and Italy don't?
Yeah, not as many, I don't think. But yeah, no, happy that we got a fairly routine win. You know, I thought the red card was deserved. I thought it was very unlucky, though. It wasn't intentional at all, obviously, but you can't, you know, go studs and hit someone in the knee. That's, you know, really dangerous. So I get why he got the red card. But I thought,
do you mind
know,
if I just ask about
the game? Well, yeah,
just about the point you made about Partey. I'm surprised that that's the player that you point to when clearly Martin Odegaard has been out for the last, you know, number of games.
I just mean overall this whole season, because I feel like the way we've been playing this year, I was just talking about like last season.
Yeah, you talked about it in terms of the fast
starts. The characteristic
was
like we would score 2-3 goals in the first half last year and we would blow teams away. Sometimes teams would come back and sometimes they wouldn't. Most of the time they wouldn't, right? So that was what we did last year. This season has been nowhere to be found. I feel like now we're like slowly moving the ball into games, feeling out opponents. We aren't giving our opponents many chances at all, and teams aren't scoring on us. You know, we're the best team in the league defensively right now. But
that's what makes me say, wouldn't you? Again, I understand that you're saying this is overall this season, but it does seem like the fast starts have specifically not happened during these last couple of weeks when Odegaard's been out.
No, the whole season
and
we haven't had any fast starts.
Yeah, and your defense has, you know, been pretty good still. And I would think that Partey's involvement would lend more to a good defense.
No,
while
that's not what
Odegaard's
was
involvement
all
would.
You've seen
you
Thomas
know, lend
Partey
to you attacking
play.
Well.
Partey, you could glide right by him in midfield. Defensively, he wasn't anything spectacular, and he was never making big last ditch tackles. He wasn't ever that guy. I mean, that's what Declan Rice is. Declan Rice is an absolute security blanket over the entire back line. The guy can make a tackle anywhere on the pitch and he'll do it. You know, he'll do the work, he'll do the pressing, he'll make the tackles, and that's he talks about it. That's the part of the game that he likes. I've always thought that Partey is the best midfield distributor in the world. Like, I don't think anyone does it better than him. Maybe Rodri, but I think he's up there in terms of like when he's on form and playing well, he's just unbelievable at that job. So you know, Casemiro is another one who comes to mind when he's on form. But you know, you see players like that who can perform that midfield role basically by themselves really, really well. I think we've missed him, you know, and I think we could have played Rice further up the pitch if we had had Thomas Partey, but having Jorginho there is a huge drop off, you know? So it's unfortunate that's and Jorginho, this was probably his best game that he played, but it was against Burnley, who were pressing him. You know, they were trying to get him to make mistakes, but I thought, you know, he was fairly decent this game. Thought Kai Havertz was okay as well, you know, in build up. He just can't get that goal, Alex. He missed again a sitter in the first minute. Should have scored an absolute tap in the back post. No one was on him by himself and just whiffs the header. Just, yeah.
He usually likes to score against Burnley too. He usually did pretty well against them. So that surprises me a little bit.
The one thing I wanted to mention is Burnley have given us a lot of hard games, you know, even in recent seasons. You know, I know that we beat them 3-1 this time, but last season, you know, they got a 0-0 draw at the Emirates.
We can't compare this current Burnley team to any of the previous Burnley teams.
Well, it still has a lot of players. Well, I'm just going to tell you the last
completely.
Let me tell you the last five results
in terms of approach. Like,
I know, but let me tell you the last five results. We drew with them 0-0. We beat them 1-0. Then we drew them 1-1. Lost 1-0. Drew 0-0. So it's been hard, Alex. Beat them 2-1. It's always been close games. I know this was all under Sean Dyche, and this is a different team. But in the past, Burnley's just it's been a hard matchup the last 2 years, and it was nice to finally just get like a routine win against them. It's been a while. Under the Wenger days, we would always just routinely smash Burnley, but now it's you know, there was a few years there where they were kind of a bogey team. So I'm glad we got a little bit past that.
All right, let's move on to Wolves 2, Tottenham 1. A very promising start for this Tottenham team when they went up to Molineux and got a goal from Brennan Johnson 3 minutes in. It seemed like there wasn't going to be any issues with the threadbare Tottenham defense after those sendings off and injuries in the Chelsea match prior. But then injury time came around, Javier, and Sarabia, the Spanish sub winger, scored an absolute peach of a goal. I'm
possibly
so happy that
goal
I woke
of the
up
season,
for this one.
An unbelievable.
No,
goal.
I wouldn't
it
go that far.
It was beautiful. The whole play was so beautiful.
It was beautiful.
It's
got to
be
not
a goal of the season
wasn't.
Contender up there. I really do. I think when you watch back the whole entire play, also just the first touch he had was unbelievable to set himself up for the strike. I mean, and then the strike near it was so nice. I loved that goal. You always think of like screamers or like 50, 40 yard goals from the halfway line, but that's just a different type of like skill and beauty in that goal.
Yeah, and he wasn't done because a couple of minutes later, he scored that equalizer in the 91st minute, and then in the 97th minute, the last kick of the game, he played in Mario Lemina, who scored the winner and gave Tottenham their second loss in as many games.
Alex, you did it! Chelsea!
We've praised Chelsea enough, Javier.
We might be because we are the boys of the CFC. Chelsea! 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 Chelsea!
Right, you're not doing anything to play down those accusations I make of you every time you suck off Chelsea or like,
I'm Mateo
talk about,
Kovacic,
like,
Alex.
You
know, I just give a little cheer there. You know,
a little fist bump for that. Yeah, it looks like we broke Tottenham, but at the same time, Molineux is a tough place to go. You can't play off Wolves as like a crap relegation team anymore. They've won too many games and they've beaten Spurs and Manchester City there, so. I don't think I'm willing to go so far as to say that we definitely broke Tottenham, but for that game, like, that was a hard one because we already mentioned they didn't have Romero because of the red card. They didn't have Udogie because of his second yellow card in that Chelsea game. They didn't have Van de Ven because of his injury in that game, and they only really had Pedro Porro.
Yeah, we said it. It cost them. It cost them the you know, it was to remain to be seen if that Chelsea game was going to cost them more than a loss, and it did. I mean, we said that they might struggle against this Wolves team. Wolves had their injuries too. They didn't have their, you know, Pedro Neto, their talisman. And they were still able to come out and get a win with this. So I think it was very impressive from Wolves. Again, I thought that they were able to keep this Tottenham team to, you know, just one goal. This team's been free-flowing and scoring goals, bunches of goals against everybody and getting loads of chances. And I think, you know what? I have to apologize to Gary O'Neill because I think I made fun of him in the pre-pod and I was like, Gary O'Neill, like that's not, I think he's one of the more underrated managers in the Premier League now. Like I've seen him talk a little bit on, you know, do some analysis and I appreciate him more now, the way that he sets his team up. And I think the way that he's brought this Wolves team to kind of start playing entertaining football. And even when losing his talisman, getting a result, I think it just shows this team's not going to be in relegation form. And I think, you know, they might be a mid-table team again, which is great for them because they were, you know, in dire straits for a year and a half there. So
I think he's also benefiting from, and again, this is just my belief, and I've been saying this since preseason. This season, outside of Everton being given some sort of crazy points deduction for their like financial charges that they're having currently be you know, reviewed and brought down on them, the bottom three to me is set. It's the three promoted teams: Luton, Sheffield, Burnley. All three of them are not on the level of the rest of the league. Yes, they've taken points off each other. They've had a shock like comeback here and there, But over the course of a 38-game season, I'm confident that if you look at like just the points won in these matches, those three promoted teams are going to go down. And people were trying to make all sorts of predictions about, oh, are Everton going to get relegated this year? Will this be the year? Oh, Wolves, they haven't made many signings. They've lost a lot of players. I mean, we even had you talking about Crystal Palace in preseason. Like, none of those teams that have been playing in the Premier League for that long are going to be as bad as those three promoted teams.
Yeah, and those teams are 1 point behind Chelsea, Alex.
Yeah, they're doing pretty well, but that's also why like I've never taken any of like the banter like other top six club fans like to do where they go, oh, Chelsea, are they going to get relegated? You know, that was happening last season.
It's like there's just no way.
It was happening a little bit at the beginning of this season when we won like one game in the first five and it was against Luton. That was starting to happen, and I just, you know, you just shrug it off and go, have you not seen these promoted teams? They're all crap and none of them spent any money to bring players in. And you need to spend a little bit, you know, you can't just, you know, bank on championship players to get you to like 30 or 40 points in the Premier League. Now you got to take a little bit of risk to keep yourself in this league. So I'm happy for Wolves, and you know, people were scared for them because they sacked Lopetegui because Lopetegui was pissed that they hadn't spent enough money and were letting players go. And they brought in Gary O'Neill a week before the season started. So I think there was some fair reason for people to be worried about them. But Gary O'Neill's completely proved like most of us wrong. So good for him.
Yeah, I mean, just listen to their last five games. They drew Villa 1-1 at home. They beat Bournemouth 2-1 away. They drew Newcastle 2-2 at home. Lost
Bournemouth,
to Sheffield.
Gary O'Neill's former team, by the way, went there and beat them after, you know, keeping them up last year.
Lost to Sheffield, which is, you know, definitely a bad
from
loss.
From a bullshit penalty right at the end that we
penalty.
Mentioned last
probably
week.
Should have been a draw. And then, you know, beat Tottenham to like not even skip a beat about their, you know, that good run that they were on. Just get right back on that horse. So good for them. They have Fulham next. They should be able to beat them too, who are on a torrid run.
All right, let's at least mention Bournemouth getting a 2-0 win against Newcastle. I didn't get to watch this one.
Yeah, that's kind of definitely the shock result of the weekend, Alex, because now I got to say, Dominic Solanke, Alex, he's on the form of his life. These last few games he's been playing, even when he hasn't been scoring, his like hold-up play. If you've been watching any games with Bournemouth, the commentator's just been gushing about Dominic Solanke the whole time. So he's on great form right now, been, you know, the one bright light for Bournemouth that's gotten them wins and draws this season. So if they're going to stay up, he's got to stay fit and keep firing.
Yeah, and I feel bad because I didn't watch that game because silly old me just assumed Newcastle would just have like a professional like 2-0 victory of their own or something like that. But no, it went the complete opposite way. And Bournemouth got themselves out of the relegation zone. And once again, I'm telling you, this current bottom three, they're the ones going down. Unless Everton gets some sort of crazy points deduction. You look at those three promoted teams down there
Sheffield
right now.
Sheffield have shown a little bit of heart these last couple of games. They got a win against Wolves, a draw against
good
Brighton,
for them.
Alex.
They should enjoy it while it lasts because they got that draw against Brighton because Brighton had a man sent off when they were up 1-0. And also Brighton got screwed by the referee and weren't given a penalty for a handball that would have made it 2-0. So Sheffield can enjoy like riding their luck while they can, but they're going to get piped by some team.
No, I agree with you. I think these three
very
are
soon.
Down too, Alex. I agree with you. I mean, we gotta also mention, you know, Villa kind of keeping up with their good form. 8-1-3 now. They've got 25 points. I mean, just great start of the season for them. Getting a pretty routine win against Fulham. Should have beaten them 5-6-1. And then Everton, Alex, like you said, they got a big away win at Crystal Palace. Not an easy place to go. And, you know, like you said, they're not going to be in any type of relegation form. They're kind of, you know, they've kind of turned that corner that we were talking about earlier in the season where they were putting in pretty decent performances, but they weren't getting results. You know, it looks like those performances now are turning into some decent results. You know, they've now only lost one out of the last five games. You know, that was that 2-0 against Liverpool, but they beat Bournemouth 3-0. They beat West Ham away 1-0, drew 1-1 with Brighton, and then now this 3-2 win. So definitely a turn in form around for Everton. And Sean Dyche, you know, back in the Premier League, it scary to see that he's building something there, because I think Everton could get pretty good under Sean Dyche if he's able to, you know, for a season or two develop them. And you know, I don't think it's going to be this year, but I think if he can get a few of the stinkers out and bring in some players that he wants, he's never really had backing before. So we'll see if he can do that.
All right, Javier, that brings us to the mutiny. I'm taking over. Just like I did first place in the Ghost Goal Podcast fan league in fantasy, it is now Alex's fantasy kitchen.
Yeah, yeah, Alex, it's all right. I'll step aside for a second. You know, I'll let the sous chef take the reins. I got a little hurt, aside. Alex. You know, my hand is I can't cook right now. You know, I got a little injury, so I'll let you do some cooking, Alex.
All right, well, I'm kind of limited in terms of suggestions I can make, but, you know, just because this is a international break. There's no Premier League football next weekend, so there's going to be 2 weeks until the Premier League kicks back off again in 2 weeks' time. So if I make any suggestions, surely they're just going to go and get injured while they're on international duty. But I'll make one proposed addition that I'm sure you're going to enjoy, Javier. And I'll make it off the back of suggesting that you let go of your Aston Villa players. You have mentioned this a couple of times now, and I'm sure you're ready to agree with me even more now after you captained Ollie Watkins and he only got one goal from a million good chances. But I think based off of their upcoming fixtures, after this break, they're going to have Spurs away, then they'll go to Bournemouth, and then Javier, Villa are going to have two home games. The problem is those two home games are against Manchester City and Arsenal. So while their home form at Villa Park has been very good, those four games...
They've won 14 straight games at home, Alex. So let's see what happens if the unstoppable force meets the immovable object. Watch them just go win-win in those games.
I don't think so, Alex.
I don't think so.
Even with Manchester City's seeming struggles, they weren't even that bad against Chelsea. They were. It was a bad game for them, and they still scored four. So they'll probably be fine. I imagine that will be a little bit of a different approach from Unai Emery. He doesn't usually like to play in that same way that Chelsea did. But anyway, I'm going to be getting rid of Ollie Watkins. In favor, most likely, unless there's some sort of injury, Eddie Nketiah. I feel like 5.7 mil, your games coming up after this break, you'll have Brentford away, Wolves at home, Luton away, and then the Aston Villa away game. Yeah, yeah, nice, those are the kind of games that I want Eddie Nketiah for. Brentford, Wolves, Luton. I'm saying it right now, Eddie Nketiah. At least three goals in those three games. I mean, maybe one of those games will have a brace.
It's a good call.
Maybe that Wolves game, but he's 5.7 million, and you know, Watkins himself is, what is he right now? 8.3. So you're getting yourself a bunch of value, additional value to use in other areas of your lineup. Get rid of Ollie Watkins now. Bring in Eddie Nketiah. That's going to be my fantasy kitchen for this week. So. Reap the rewards from the first place team in our Ghost Goal Fantasy Fan League right now. Also, again, if you're not in fantasy, it doesn't even matter that you're too late. Just join anyway. Get yourself in the rhythm of picking up players, dumping them when they're starting to play bad and their value is diminishing. Just get yourself in the rhythm and start with us again from the beginning next season. I think that's enough time. We have missed out on some things like Man United winning again and Liverpool with a pretty convincing win over Brentford, but I'm sure we'll get to them when we've got less to talk about on next week's pod in the midst of this last international break of the 2023 season. But Javier, thank you for joining me. A little later than usual, but I always appreciate it. If you want to follow Javier, you can do so on Twitter at JavierF9. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at ASMoss92. And you can follow the podcast socials at Ghost Goal Pod. Enjoy the final international break of the 2023 year. And until next time, see you.